day, everyone, and welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange conference call. Today's call is being recorded. And now for introductions, I would like to turn the call over to Ms. Christy Snyder. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Matt, and welcome everyone to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is troubleshooting the WebSphere MQ for ZOS, IMS Adapter, and IMS Bridge. During the presentation, all lines will be muted. After the presentation, the lines will open for a question and answer session. Today's presenter is Beverly Kingsley. Beverly joined IBM 18 years ago after spending 5 years at ExxonMobil as an IMS systems programmer. She has a wealth of mainframe experience, having worked with the IBM ZOS CICS Level 2 support team for 8 years before moving to MQ. Her background in IMS and MQ gives her the skills to diagnose WebSphere MQ IMS problems. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Beverly. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you, Christine. Welcome, everyone. Slide number 2. My presentation to you covers the managing of problems with the IMS bridge and the IMS adapter. I worked with MQ Level 2, and I handle MQ IMS problems all the time. And I have come to the conclusion that most problems that we deal with can be handled by customers themselves without having to refer them to MQ support. So the presentation will offer you some hints and tips on how to diagnose MQ IMS problems. In addition to the troubleshooting topics, I will provide some background information on the two interfaces, and finally, how to pursue the problem with MQ support if you can't get anywhere yourself. Slide 3. The presentation will cover the following topics, first for the IMS bridge and then for the IMS adapter. To differentiate between the two, I'll go over how they are configured, the message flow from MQ to IMS, and the reply back to MQ. I'll talk about the most common problem areas with these interfaces, some useful commands you can issue to help you diagnosing the problems with these interfaces. Then I'll cover the documentation MQ support requires in case you need our help to diagnose the problem. And finally, I'll give some diagnostic tips to help you pinpoint the cause of the problem. Slide 4. The first foil and the IMS bridge overview outlines what the bridge can do for you, and the primary advantage is to allow legacy applications to run and change without having to issue any MQ API requests. In other words, you don't have to modify your application to issue MQ calls. It uses the IMS OTNA interface to put MQ messages on IMS queues. MQ is an OTNA client. It uses a ZOS cross-coupling facility as a transport layer between MQ and IMS OTNA. For this reason, it is considered high performance as there is no TCP IP nor VCAM or any type of networking involved. It supports all types of IMS transactions, and it provides an intense level of security, which I'll discuss in a later point. Slide 5. This foil summarizes the rules and limitations of using the bridge. One IMS control region can connect to several queue managers, and one queue manager can connect to several IMSs. The only requirement is that they must be in the same SysFlex and the same XGS group. As I said earlier, no networking is involved. Every time you stop and start the MQ IMS bridge, an MQ event message is produced. MQ triggering cannot be used with this interface. Slide 6. The next 3 slides cover a summary of the configuration requirements for the bridge. The requirements basically cover three areas. The area in this file covers defining the QMANAGER to XCX. You do so via the OTNA CAN parameter of CSQ660 macro of ZPALM. There are five additional parameters: the XCF group name, NQXCF member name, followed by the IMS destination resolution, user exit, DFS, DRU0. Then the age parameter, which tells in seconds how long a user ID from NQ is considered valid in IMS. And the last parameter specifies the first three characters of a TPAT name. More about TPAT later. Slide 7. The second configuration area to define is IMS to XCF. You do that by either passing the XCF parameters in your IMS control region JCL and by the DFS PBXX member in the IMS ProcLib. The parameters are keyword parameters. The important ones are the GR name, which states the XCF group name, the user var parameter that gives the XCF member name. If not specified, the default is the IMS VTAM Apple ID. You can also use the OTMA parameter to state whether you would like to start OTMA automatically when IMS is cold or warm started. Slide 8. The third area of bridge configuration is defining the QMQ objects themselves. You have three things to define. One, the search class definition that has the XCF information. Two, the bridge queue that uses the search class you define with the XCF information. And finally, you define the queue to receive the replies from IMS. This is a normal queue using a normal search class. Slide 9. This is a simple overview of the message flow to IMS and the reply coming back from IMS to NQ. The message arrives and the NQ IMS bridge queue. And two, the bridge code gets the message and sends it to OTMA. OTMA puts the message on the IMS queue. The transaction is then scheduled. It does a get unique for the message, then does some IMS work. It then inserts the reply message to the IMS queue. OTMA sends the reply to NQ. The NQ IMS bridge puts the reply and the reply to queue. Slide 10. The next two slides deals with typical problem areas. Firstly, an understanding of the messages, reason codes, and sense codes you may receive when using the bridge. All bridge or bend codes start with 00FAX2, and the messages start with CSQ2. The CSQ2005I is received when there is an error processing the message. The feedback code is the key field in this message, and is always the range of 300 through 399. In order to convert it to an OTMA sense code, you subtract 300 from the value, then convert it to hex to decimal, and this gives you the OTMA sense code. The OTMA sense codes are documented in the IMS OTMA guide. Note the CSEC name in message CSQ2005I. It indicates the direction of the message flow. That's the CSQ20CP0 and the CSQ2QCP1 message. Slide number 11. Here we go into some detail into why NQ cannot connect to its XCF partner. How do I know if the connection is successful or unsuccessful? If successful, you'll see the CSQ 2010i message on the NQ master job log. If unsuccessful, you will probably see the CSQ 2011 iMessage. There are four areas you need to consider. Firstly, security. The bridge security covers two areas. Connection access control and application access control. So if MQ doesn't connect to the partner, you need to check the connection access control configuration. MQ user ID should be granted read access to the OTMA group profile in the external security manager facility class. The next area to consider is the storage class definition. Make sure it matches what I've told you in the configuration file. Also, make sure the storage class points to the correct XCF group name. And lastly, make sure it is pointing to the correct IMS system. Slide number 12. Okay. The next set of problems to consider are when messages don't flow to IMS. The following items should be checked out. One, issue the display queue status command. IP prox should be 1. If it is 0, check if the queue is a bridge queue. Is it defined with a storage class with XCF information? 2, is IMS running? If not, start IMS. If IMS is running, issue the display OTMA command to check if OTMA is active. If OTMA is running, the value for curb depth should be 0 because the bridge removes the messages as soon as they arrive on the queue. If curb depth is greater than 0, check for error messages in the MQ job log. Is MQ connected to OTMA and is accepting traffic? Is the T-pipe stopped? More on T-pipe later. Display the status of the program and transaction in IMS. Are they stopped? Are there security issues somewhere? Let's go on to slide number 13. The next four slides discuss three levels of security within the IMS bridge. First, connection between MQ and IMS across the bridge utilizes two profiles within the External Security Manager Facility class. One is the connection security, as mentioned earlier, and the second is for application access control, and this one is used to determine how much security check-in is performed for each message passed to IMS, and this is based upon the MQ subsystem user ID level of access to this profile. Slide number 14. The second level of security is the user ID validation in MQ. For that, the user ID in the ND is used. The way it is validated depends on the MQ subsystem user ID level of access to the XCF IMS profile in the facility class. The MQ user ID access can either be control or alter, update, read, or none. The user ID is checked and all access except for control or alter, which requires no check-in as the user ID is trusted. Once validated, the user ID is passed to IMS and can be used for normal IMS security. Slide number 15. The third level of security involved is in the bridge is OTMA security itself. OTMA security can be set to either check full, none, or profile. With all of these, apart from none, the user ID from the ND is passed to IMS for transaction and security check-in. The difference between them is how this ACWE is built. Slide number 16. It's a common problem for users when you co-start IMS. The OTMA security default is full. So if no security check is expected for the user ID, it will fail. The recommendation is to start OTMA automatically, to not start OTMA automatically when IMS is started. Use automation to set OTMA security and to start OTMA. Another common problem I'd like to point out here, although it is not included on the FOIL, is that if profile, QManager, that node, that subsys, that security exists in the NQ admin class, no user ID will be passed to IMS, and the connection will fail unless LastSec OTNA setting is none. Slide number 17. Before I start talking about problems with T-types, just a quick overview of what they are. T-type is used to communicate with OTMA. NQ-IMS bridge passes messages through a T-type. Transaction output from IMS is usually returned through the same T-type. Either one or two T-types are created for each active IMS bridge view. One for asynchronous messages, and one for synchronous messages. The T-type name begins with three characters. This is the T-type prefix, which you supplied on the OTMA CAN parameter and ZParm, plus five-digit number. This is sold for local queue. It begins with two characters for shared queues. T-types are created by MQ when they are first used. Before version 6 of MQ, there is no way to associate a T-type with an NQ queue. In version 6 of NQ, the display queue command to update command is updated to show the T-type used to communicate with OTMA. Slide 18. Okay. There is no command to delete a T-type. Asynchronous messages are sent over synchronized T-types, and synchronous messages are sent over non-synchronized T-types. This FOIL pretty much differentiates between the two. Slide 19, please. T-type and synchronization problems usually result in one of four MQ messages. If the bridge discovers mismatched sequence numbers when synchronizing with a T-type, message CSQ 2020 Easy is issued. Use the MQ command reset T-type to initiate resynchronization with IMS T-type by using the XCF information and sequence numbers given in the message. Two, if the bridge cannot resynchronize with IMS, the IMS sense code is returned in CSQ 2023 Easy and the connection to OTMA is stopped. The action you take to fix this error will depend on the sense code given. Security errors are very common with this message. Sense code 0008000. In this case, you'll need to check the security settings for MQ on the bridge. Three, if the bridge cannot resync with an individual IMS T-type, the IMS sense code is returned in message CSQ 2025 Easy and the T-type is stopped. Again, the direction you take is in finding the cause of the error will depend on the IMS sense code given in the message. Slide 20. And the fourth message, CSQ 2024 Easy, T-type is unknown to partner, may or may not be a problem depending on the circumstances. If IMS is cold-started, the T-type is a residual one from the connection with the previous IMS and can be ignored. Okay. If IMS hasn't been cold-started, then you need to investigate it further. Either way, the unit of recovery is backed out and processing continues. Slide 21. Format errors are common using the bridge. These larger fall into two categories. The first is an invalid length. For example, if the message size you specify in the LLZZ field is greater than the maximum OTNA segment size, which is 32 kilobytes, then the MQ GET will fail with format error. If your message has an MQ IIH, this is the IMS information header, and the reply to format is left blank, the message will be put on the dead letter queue with return code 2110, format error. This can happen because IMS puts its MAD name in the reply to format field when an error has been generated. It can be either DFS, M01, 2, 3, or 5. If you do not have an MQIA structure on your original message, to avoid the format error, specify the format that you want for the reply message as the MFS MAD name in the IMS application insert to the IOPCB. Slide number 22. This is the last bridge problem I want to talk about, and this is when IMS rejects the message that has been passed to it with sense code 001ABLE, okay, via message CSQ2001I. The 001ABLE means IMS detected an error and cancel the message before putting it on the IMS queue for processing. IMS will send an NQ message containing the reason for the failure to the reply to queue. In this case, it is 0019, stating that the trans our program is stopping IMS. To correct this, you need to issue the command to start the transaction or program in IMS. Slide number 23. The following few slides list useful commands that you can use for displaying status when you have a problem with the bridge. Throughout the presentation, I mentioned a few of them. Firstly, to display MQ resources, use the display queue command with the TPIP option. As I said earlier, this option is new in MQ version 6. It allows you to match up the bridge queue with its associated TPIP. You can also use the IP proc and curb depth option on the display queue status command. For running bridge queue, IP proc should be 1 and curb depth should be 0. Okay. Slide number 24. For displaying IMS resources, use these display commands. I should point out that MQ is also known as an IMS team member. Slide number 25. You can use these commands for displaying and managing OTMA resources. Slide 26. The following few slides list out the documentation required if you need to escalate the problem with MQ support. And this slide is a list of minimum documentation required for us to pursue the problem with the IMS bridge. Slide 27. If you can recreate the problem, we may ask you to start GTF trace and MQ trace with MQ trace points going to GTF as documented in the MQ problem determination guide. Slide number 28. We may also ask for IMS trace. Note that in MQ version 6, since you can now correlate a bridge queue with a TPIP, it is advisable to limit your tracing to just that TPIP. The IMS trace produced hex 6701 IMS log records, which you can format with the DFS ERA10 and DFS ERA30 utilities, and at offset hex 50 in the message prefix section is the OTMA header, which includes the MQMD. Slide number 29. We may also ask you to take dumps of IMS and MQ regions. Please note that the documentation requirements for the bridge is also summarized in tech note number 1242366, found by searching from the www.ibm.com webpage. Slide number 30. If you want to diagnose a problem with the IMS bridge, there are several places you need to check for error messages and a bent code. And here they are. Slide number 31. And finally, for the bridge, if you believe that messages are being put to the bridge queue and then result in errors, it is very important to check out the content of the message as it sits on the bridge queue. Use this technique to stop the bridge queue and then use one of these utilities to print the message so you can examine it for errors. Okay, that's the bridge. Let's move on to the adapter. Slide number 32. This is just an overview of what the adapter is. Its main function is to provide MQ API support for IMS applications in MPP, ISP, and BNP regions. It uses the external subsystem attach facility provided by IMS. The IMS adapter allows IMS applications to make use of all the MQ functionality. To name just two, MQ triggering and two-phase commit. Both the adapter and the IMS application run in the same address space. Slide number 33. This diagram illustrates that the trigger monitor runs in the IMS address space. More on trigger monitor later. Slide number 34. This is an overview of the configuration requirements for the IMS adapter. Firstly, you need to define MQ to IMS by adding the subsystem member in the IMS track live as shown here. The thing to note is that the parameters are positional, and two of them are used by MQ. Please note the language interface token, the LIT, and the region error option. More about these in a minute. Slide 35. Continuing with the adapter configuration requirements, you must include MQ load libraries, STSQ auth, and STSQ ANLE in JabLive or SetLive concatenation in the JCL of your IMS control region and for any dependent region that connects to MQ. Of course, this is so if they are not in LPA or linked list. To guarantee that these libraries do not lose their authorization, we recommend that you also include them in the DFS ESL concatenation. You must customize, assemble, and link edit the Queue Manager Definition Table CSQQ-V and place it in the IMS region set live. Please note that the LIT, which is the language interface token, must match the LIT in the SSM member of IMS Track Live. Your application should be linked with an appropriate IMS language interface module, DFS-LI-000, as well as the MQ IMS sub, CSQQ sub, if you're interested in two-phase commit. Slide number 36. If you're interested in using the BMP trigger monitor, CSQQ-TRMN, then you need to include it in the IMS sysgen, bill a PSB, and if necessary, a ACB gen for it. Slide number 37. You also need to modify the trigger monitor JCL to point it to the queue manager and the initiation queue that it monitors. In addition, you need to specify the L term to send error messages. The default is master, if not specified, and whether the error messages should also go to the console. Before you submit the trigger monitor job, you must ensure the subsystem is started in IMS. Otherwise, it will fail. And by the way, the only ways you can stop the trigger monitor are end in queue, end IMS, or to issue the MVS SAP command. Slide number 38. This diagram shows the IMS adapter message flow when using triggering. The note explains this flow. Okay. Slide number 39. This diagram shows a synchronous message sent from IMS. The point note is, since it's making use of two-phase commit, the messages get committed on the NQ transmission queue at IMS sync point. To enforce two-phase commit, your application must be linked with a CSQQ stub. Slide number 40. This slide starts the discussion of problem areas. The IMS adapter ABEN codes begin with U30 and the message begins with CSQQ. Most of these adapter ABEN codes are due to incorrect configuration of the adapter. Slide number 41. Some users have problems linking the IMS language interface module or forgetting to link it with the application. This can typically result in a ABEN OC4 where you will usually see a BALA to it. Slide number 42. Problems with library authorization is a common problem where some of the libraries in STEP-LIBE concatenation are not authorized, and this will result in message DFS 3603I with reason code 128. To ensure that the STSQ auth and the STSQ ANLE libraries do not lose authorization, you must include them in the IMS DFS ESL library concatenation. Slide number 43. Another common problem is poor performance using the NQ IMS adapter. Performance is greatly improved by preloading the adapter modules listed in this slide. You do this by including them in the DMS MPLXX member of IMS ProcLive. This eliminates the overhead of STEP-LIBE access. This is fully documented in the system setup guide. Thank you. Slide number 44. If you have problem connecting to the NQ IMS adapter, you will receive one of these messages. In general, these are caused by configuration errors. Slide number 45. Applications can receive several errors if NQ is not connected to IMS. The action taken depends on the region error option that you specify in the SSM member of IMS ProcLive. The application can either receive a completion code, a reason code, or a terminate anomaly. Slide number 46. Here are some useful commands to control and monitor the IMS adapter. Slide 47. The following few slides list out the documentation required if you need NQ support else to analyze the problem. This slide lists the minimum documentation for us to pursue a problem with the NQ IMS adapter. Please note that LE is notorious for intercepting dumps and producing unusable CEE dumps. CAPAR II-10573 and how you can prevent this and get a dump that can be formatted under IPCS. Slide number 48. If you can recreate the problem, we may ask you to start NQ trace going to DTS. See the NQ problem termination guide. Slide number 49. We may also ask you for IMS trace. The IMS trace output goes to the IMS log. Also, we may ask you to take dump of NQ and IMS region. Slide number 50, please. And finally, if you want to diagnose the problem with the NQ IMS adapter, there are several places you may need to check for error messages and ABEN codes. And here they are. Slide number 51. Okay, this slide includes links to a number of sites that provide valuable online resources for WebSphere products. DeveloperWorks offers in-depth technical information. The events link and support page points you to the webcast and conference information. Visit WebSphere.org for user group information and more product information. The IBM Education Assist consists of self-help modules to help new users up to the learning curve quickly. The ESR tool is for Passport Advantage clients to open, update, and view PMRs online. And the My Support link and all product support pages let you sign up for weekly email updates for products of interest to you. This concludes the presentation. I'll now turn it over to Christy, the moderator.
Thank you, Beverly, for a great presentation. And at this point, Matt, we would like to open the lines for questions. I will now turn the call over to Beverly Kingsley.
Thank you, Christy.
And we do have one question in queue. This comes from Lauren Brenson with IBM.
Hi, I was just wondering on the OTMA startup, I think you were saying you recommend using automation to, you know, start IMS with OTMA equals N and then have automation start OTMA after setting the security properly. Can you use the OTMA SE IMS parameter? Like we have it set OTMA SE equals C for check and OTMA equals Y for, you know, so when IMS comes up, it's all in check and Y status. You know, will that work, or what's your opinion on that?
Oh, I'm going to have to defer this question for research. Since I'm not up with the IMS parameters, if this, you know, that statement in the presentation was due because you can lose the settings of the security settings for OTMA, but I don't know if this parameter you mentioned can retain over the cold start.
Okay.
I'll be happy to get back to you on that.
Thank you.
At this time, I'll turn the call back over to Ms. Snyder for any additional or closing remarks.
Thank you, Matt. And at this time, we will conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation as well. We hope you will join us for future presentations. Thank you very much for joining us today, and thank you, Beverly, for presenting today.
And once again, this does conclude today's conference call. Thank you for joining us, and have a great day.